National Public Radio presents a production of the Hollywood Theater of the Year, 2000X. A radio series devoted to stories of the next millennia. Now, here is your host, the award-winning writer and critic, Harlan Ellison.
When I got out of the Army and I went to work for a publisher in Chicago, and we're talking 1959 or 60 here, Frank M. Robinson actually and literally saved my life. I mean, not to mention my sanity, but he saved my life. So, apart from my admiration for his writing and his plotting skills, which are formidable, I have a personal affection for this most excellent writer and historian and editor who will now dazzle you with an adaptation of one of his most famous novelettes, The Hunting Season.
David Black is afraid. He's tried to control it, but he knows it shows in the glistening shine on his pale face, in the nervous jump of his cheek muscles, and in the restless pacing back and forth on the faded rug of the seedy room of the seedy hotel. It's late afternoon, and it won't be long before the onset of the hunt. He stiffens and shoots a glance toward the window. It's dusk. The street lights have gone on, but a pale glow still lingers in the west. He still has a little time. Joe Reed must be paying him an early visit. It's not unusual. David's done it himself upon occasion.
Joseph Reed stands smiling in the doorway.
You're early, Reed. I've got another half hour.
Bet you do, David. But I didn't think you'd object to seeing me before the hunt begins.
Do I have a choice?
No. Not exactly a luxurious accommodations. Not even by 20th century standards.
That's all I could afford.
There's no air in here. What's that smell?
Car exhaust. Cheap liquor. Sweat.
Could be worse, I guess. Especially since you're a traitor to the state. We could have organized the hunt in 16th century Spain during the Inquisition, or Rome during the time of Caligula. A large American city of the mid-20th century is relatively civilized.
Well, that's your opinion.
You scared, David?
Just nervous. I've been on too many hunts to be scared.
Always on the other side, though. Still, I like your spirit. It's always more exciting to hunt spirited game. A lot of people agree with me. You know how many citizens signed up for this hunt? Close to 500. The lure of spirited quarry.
I don't suppose anything's come of my petition for a new hearing.
Nada. You get a lot of balls asking for one, if you ask me. You're a traitor.
Well, there again, our opinions differ.
You question state theory.
I discussed the hunts.
In public.
In private. With one or two friends that I thought I could trust.
Meaning me?
You know this spirit pretty well, don't you? You've done some studying.
The mark of a good hunter, David. Get familiar with the territory.
Yeah, well, that's something the game is not allowed to do. Why do you suppose that if citizens are so superior and rank and file is so inferior that the state gives the hunters an unfair advantage?
What do you care? The state would have made an exception in your case anyway.
Look, Reed, I've only got a few more minutes, and I want to spend them alone, okay?
You remember the rules?
Yeah, of course I do.
You have your choice of the way the hunt will end. What's your pleasure?
From the front. One burn between the eyes.
What? I shoot you in the back?
Why not? You stabbed me there.
Now. Don't waste your precious time playing on my guilt feelings. They're non-existent.
Ladies and gentlemen! Hunting season is now open!
She's small and blonde, and apparently lonesome. She has just settled at his table.
Unasked and uninvited.
So, kiddo, what's your opinion of all this segregation business?
Do I have to have an opinion?
She looks him over with a practiced eye.
Well, you look like the kind of guy who has an opinion about everything.
Maybe I do.
That's what I thought. I can spot him a mile away.
The words are unfamiliar, but the tone isn't. It's the kind of tone that citizens use in his own time, referring to rank and filers.
Don't mind me, pal. I'm in a crummy mood. Got stood up tonight. I guess you're the handiest guy to take it out on. Drink?
He nods. He turns his attention to the crowd.
The girl gestures to a nearby waiter and turns back to her new friend.
Oh, what made you pick out this particular spot? I mean, it's my own personal favorite.
She can't be a hunter, he thinks. She's too soft, physically and mentally. She doesn't have that hard fire in her eyes that a citizen does. She's safe. I just thought this might be a perfect place to get away from it all.
Mm.
But then he thought he still has a long way to go. He left his shabby hotel at sundown, plunging into the depths of the neon-lighted wilderness, alive with unfamiliar sights and sounds. They confused him for a moment. And then he'd headed for the busiest section of the city, where he'd be inconspicuous. Inconspicuous and safe from Reed's sniffers, or any one of the 500 anxious citizens still looking for him.
Here's mud in your eye. Hey, wait a minute. If I'm going to drink a toast, I got to know your name.
David.
I like plain names. They're so, unrevealing.
He feels uneasy. Women always act more circumspect at his own time. More like the state's ideal behavior for the citizen class. Yes, yes, but that class doesn't exist here.
Say, kind of on the shy side, aren't you, pal?
He isn't listening. Two tables away.
A middle-aged couple.
Watch him intently.
He stares back, and he lets his eyes slide away. But not before he's seen.
Their look of intense interest.
Change to one of half-concealed amusement.
His palms feel sticky. Maybe it's just his imagination. Maybe he's mistaken.
You know, the best way to get over shyness is to dance. You feel up to it, huh?
I'm not very good.
Oh, come on. Doesn't matter. Come on.
When they finish their torturous turns on the dance floor, David notices that
the middle-aged couple is still watching every move he makes.
I'm right, he thinks. I'm caught in a hunter's web. They've spotted me already. They probably have spotters all around the city.
Hey, pal, come on, what's eating you? Look like you've seen a ghost.
Nothing. I'm hot. It's very hot in here.
Well, maybe you ought to blow this joint. I know another place we can...
Thanks, but no.
I've just been wasting my time here, haven't I?
You said it, I didn't.
Two tables down, the middle-aged man...
And his wife...
Catch his eye and nod slightly.
Just a moment before, they had said something to the waiter.
And now they were holding the same type of glass to their lips that he had.
Black understood. A cat and mouse play.
You have wine?
We'll have wine. Drink something else?
So will we. Just letting you know that we know who you are, my boy.
There's no doubt about it now. I don't like this stuff. What else could I order?
Well, anything your little heart desires.
Something that makes you urinate.
Oh, swell. Drink enough of anything, it'll do that.
Yeah. Look, I don't know much about 20...
What?
About liquor. Why don't you suggest something for me?
Well, I don't know. Try beer.
Waiter, bring me a beer. In a bottle. A big bottle.
Man, you meet all kinds.
He switched to beer.
The middle-aged couple did likewise.
Several bottles later.
The middle-aged man gets up and heads for the rear of the room.
Black smiles grimly to himself. He stands up to follow.
After he leaves, the girl's slightly fuzzy expression quickly fades to one of beady-eyed sobriety. She looks down and notices with satisfaction that Black has stolen her money-filled purse. Now she coolly regards the middle-aged woman two tables down.
She was staring worriedly in the direction her husband and Black had taken. obviously pondering whether or not to call the manager.
Hey, what do you think you're doing?
I'm so sorry. Silly me. I seem to have knocked your purse off the table. You go
ahead. Come on. I'll get it.
Oh, jeez. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on it.
Just give it to me.
All right. Here it is. Grapes, have a good life.
Outside in the muggy night heat, she takes a brief moment for self-congratulations. She has started David Black's education, and she managed to furnish him with money that he would undoubtedly need. And when she stepped on the handbag, she felt the satisfying crunch and pop of the tiny transceiver communications set, which means that Black is, for the moment anyway, in the clear.
There had been two of them in that small, dirty mess room. He'd only meant to bind and gag the middle-aged man, but the man had struggled and he tried to scream, so he had to. He had to. It was a man's own fault. He forgot one of the basics of the hunt. Cornered game is desperate and therefore dangerous. Oh, damn it. He had meant to kill him, but having done so would prejudice the state against him. Reed will be along, but not for 10 or 20 minutes. Time enough to consider his position and be up and running again. His position's improved, but only by a hair. He has successfully evaded the first hunters and has stolen a large supply of the ugly paper money that's used in this culture. But the death of the hunter will make the others more vigilant. Somebody's coming. Just a young couple strolling in the park on a summer's evening. Yeah, it's a practice he remembers the state frowns upon, but not unknown for all that. It's way past midnight now. Most of the theaters and the wine shops will be letting out, and the revelers will be going home. The city will revert to a desert populated only by night watchmen. And once the city becomes even partially deserted, Black will be that much easier to track. Somewhere behind him, he can hear the low purr of a car going slowly down the street. He turns, he makes it out. Two blocks down, its headlights are off. One block over, another car creeping down the pavement. And under a streetlight, a block away, a man is lighting a cigarette and staring calmly in his direction. They're waiting for him to do something. He cuts through one of the grassy stretches. His frantic stride takes him to another few blocks of soft shrubbery and grass. And then the park ends. There is nothing beyond except a large open court in the front of a railway station. Can't cross it without being seen. A car, one of those he saw at the other end of the park, drives up to the court. Nobody gets out. He glances desperately around. On the left is the edge of the park and the court. An iron railing and sheer drop to the freight yards of the train station. He dodges behind some freight cars. He decides to follow the tracks until he hits a residential section where he can lose himself again. Maybe. He pauses, but only long enough to get to look back. Few men gather at the railing where he's gone over. And then the lanterns dip and he realizes that they're coming down after him.
What do you have?
Huh?
What do you have?
Something to drink.
We don't serve drinks here, only coffee.
Coffee, then. It's what I meant, coffee.
Anything else?
A couple of scrambled eggs and toast. It's almost daylight, and the small lunch counter is starting to fill up with people on their way to work.
They take fleeting notice of Black's dirty, torn clothing.
And the stubble on his tired face.
And then turn back to their morning coffee and eggs with an outward show of indifference.
That masks the curiosity within.
They seem to come in all shapes and sizes. No standardization. It's a simple sort of anarchy. Something like the rank and filers in his own time. By now, enough people should be on the streets to cover his movements. It's safe to leave now. What do I owe you?
Let's see. Two eggs scrambled and coffee. That'll be 87 cents.
Here.
Here's your change. Oh, here's a little advice.
Advice?
Yeah, you're too easy a mark, Black. Reed's gonna be disappointed. Maybe you ought to start running again, huh?
Land Limited for Woodstock, Crystal Lake, Beloit, Minneapolis, and St. Paul, now ready on track 6. All aboard.
Let me have the morning paper.
It'll be a dime, mister.
A dime?
10 cents, a dime, one-tenth of a dollar.
Oh. Yeah, there you go. Where's the men's room?
It's right over there.
Thanks. One of the washbowls is free. Oh, yeah. That's a little better. But he smells. His clothes are full of his own body odor, sure to be picked up easily by any sniffer. He fumbles in his pockets. He fishes out a bottle from the handbag that he's stolen in the wine shop. Whew. He uncorked the top. Ooh. It's a strong, pleasant odor.
A man in a blue uniform.
He learned that such uniforms designate police.
Came into the washroom and stopped short, turning a leering face towards him. Hey, Joe, come here.
In a moment, he was joined by a second blue uniform.
One of them came over and... Just like spring, ain't it?
Black reddens. He can handle both of them, but the uniforms denote authority. It's best not to antagonize it.
Don't you think it's kind of strong?
Black realizes he must be violating a taboo of this civilization.
The other blue uniform suddenly stepped behind him, caught his arm, and twisted it sharply. We don't want you starting any trouble here. On your way.
But I didn't...
Sure, beat it.
Goddamn bum.
Black's mind feels twisted with a curiously helpless anger. He was a citizen once, with all the rights and prerogatives that went with it, and it's a new experience to be treated as a... Five, please. Sundown. An eternity of walking the streets, dodging trackers, hiding in theaters and libraries, any place where a crowd would serve as a cover. Sundown. An hour's respite before the fear would be on him again. And he'd be the hare at the head of the chase, dodging through the warrens of the city, desperately trying to find a hole to hide in. Sundown. The end of the hunt's first period. And in a small way, even if only by the virtue of Joe Reed's leniency, it is a triumph for him because he is still alive.
5 minutes sooner, David, and you'd have been too early.
Huh?
Reed is sitting on the bed holding a Williams burner in his hand. He looks disappointed.
Black tries to look calm. But I got here a little too late, didn't I?
Reed cocks the Williams and points it at Black's chest. I'm not so sure.
He's tired. But not too tired to whirl to the window and breathe an involuntary sigh of relief at the blackness outside.
A little jumpy, aren't you? But that'll wear off sooner or later. Exhaustion will conquer your nerves. You've had quite a time of it, haven't you?
Did the state
grant your reprieve? Don't worry, David. If they do, I'll be the first to let you know. You know, I wasn't expecting you to jump the railing at the station last night. Nevertheless, I'd taken the precaution of planting spotters all along the escape route in case you did. Nasty part of the city you wound up in. I can't help sympathizing with you. You used to be a full citizen. Can't be easy mingling with people like that. You look so haggard this morning at the lunch counter. You didn't seem to enjoy your coffee and eggs. I was in a business suit at the time, 3 stools down. We lost you on the streetcars, but picked you up again at the railroad terminal. You did the wise thing, not trying to leave the city. We couldn't have afforded to let you do that. I'm a little sorry about the incident in the station, too. That perfume would have thrown off our sniffers, but... well, men don't wear that kind of scent in this civilization. You should have boned up on that before the hunt started. You drew first blood today, David, but otherwise you wasted most of your time bumbling around. Frankly, I'd expected more from you. I'd heard you were an ace hunter, so I assumed you'd do equally well as a quarry. Not much fun tracking you. If you'd come back early, I think I would have ended the game right then. Tired as you are, it must have been a great temptation to come back just a few seconds early.
Name, please.
Elizabeth Smith to see Professor Doe.
Please stand on the scanning mark. Thank you. One moment, please. You may enter.
Hello, John.
Liz, oh, good to see you. Come, sit down.
Is the room shielded?
Not enough. I mean, we're safe from eavesdroppers, but not from noise.
Constant reminder of the state's vigilance, eh?
Well, they're not vigilant enough, thank goodness.
Speaking of which, I want to tell you about this one boy in my class. He bears watching.
Oh, which one?
Richard Rowe.
Ah, good name for a citizen. But which Richard Rowe?
The one with the fat face and the cowlick that won't stay down. He's got a curious mind. He thinks. He questions.
He's in for trouble. The state doesn't like that sort of thing.
Yes, but we do.
Okay, I'll keep an eye on him.
How are things going?
Slow. More evolution than revolution. I'd like to speed things up a bit, without, of course, an actual armed insurrection.
Well, a lot of good it will do against a regime as militaristic as this one.
Well, its own rigidity could ultimately work in our favor. If you can't bend, you break. What we need is patience.
Patience, yes, that's the hard part. Keeping the faith without any encouraging signs.
Mm-hmm. And what about David Black? Anything encouraging there?
Hard to say. I took the time car back to the barbarian period where they stranded him.
Where? An American city in the mid-20th century A.D.?
Yes.
Well, it could be worse.
Well,
it could be America at the end of the 20th century. So?
Well, I managed to plant an idea in his head about minority groups, slip him some money, help him to escape a trap that was laid for him in this, nightclub, they call it.
Nightclub? What are his chances of coming over to our side?
Hard to say also. Now, true, he objected to the hunts, which is why we noticed him in the first place. Further, our research shows that he always has had a sense of character, high moral sense. But whether this experience will open his eyes after a lifetime of indoctrination, I don't know. He still has faith in the state. He still has hopes for a reprieve.
Not very smart.
Well, maybe the time and place will help fuel his enlightenment.
A reactionary world like that one, repressive, conformist, materialistic.
Yes, but it's also a time of foment, John, of a new age. He's right in the thick of it, in the heart of it, rubbing elbows with all manner of people, stuck in a city where access to new ideas and new sensations are, well, impossible to avoid. Any news on him from your end?
Well, we managed to keep a man on him all during the first night and the next day, but it wasn't easy. Pretty dangerous, too. We were always bumping into hunters, though they didn't catch on to who we were. Past experience gives us an edge, and we need it. Black doesn't take good care of himself. Joseph Reed could have bagged him any time he wanted to. So it's clear to us that Reed's waiting until the last minute to pounce. Mm. But in the meantime... well, Liz, in the meantime, I am wondering if it's worth it. Well, granted, Black sees the light. How valuable could he be to the movement?
Wait, you're not thinking of abandoning him now.
Well, why not?
Why not?
What do you care? Have you fallen under his spell?
What is that supposed to mean?
Well, it means he's handsome. Swashbuckling kind of figure.
Oh,
well,
please.
Isn't he? Maybe you're losing your objectivity.
Maybe you're losing yours. It is you who keeps on harping on outward appearances.
Me? All right. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. It's just that the state has so drummed up this superiority-inferiority myth into us, all this emphasis on the physical side that I...
John, please get over it. This is exactly the kind of thing we have to fight. As for David Black, he's the first citizen ever condemned to the hunt. Ever. That's a sure sign of decay within the state apparatus. Now, should he escape and throw in with us, he'd be a sore that just wouldn't heal.
But only if he repudiates the entire socio-political theory the state is grounded on. And how likely is that?
Well, you and I and the others were also molded from the cradle. We managed to change. John, please, I think he deserves a chance.
All right. All right. We'll keep him in our sights, try to give him a hand.
Good.
And if we don't intervene, or if he doesn't smarten up pretty fast, Liz, Reed is going to guarantee him a slow, painful death. Now, I need you to contact Black again and see if there's any hope for him.
And if there isn't?
Well, we leave him to his fate.
David sits in a crowded theater. The only empty seat is the one next to his.
Excuse me, is this seat taken?
Help yourself.
Thank you.
Black waits until the newcomer has shed his raincoat and hat, and he has them on his lap, momentarily uncovering his hands. I'm sorry. Did I just crush your transceiver? Huh? Huh? What about your Williamsburg? Oh, here it is. You are a fool. Get up.
I understand that the state was going to review my case. What happened? Tell me what you know or you'll die right here. Remember, I've got your Williams.
The state did review your case.
And? And?
The sentence stands.
Black has a sudden urge to go away somewhere and be quietly sick. His last hope has vanished. He's strictly on his own now, like any other quarry.
You were stupid to let me catch you. The state should have briefed you about me. But the state makes mistakes, doesn't it?
The state is infallible.
Well, then how, with all of your state training, did you manage to get caught?
The state knows best.
Really? Do you think these hunts are best?
It's a fair method for punishing criminals, as determined by a benevolent state.
Will you tell me how I'm punished by your death?
Oh, the complacence of a true believer glorifying his own confidence in the state. Such a fool.
Into this alley.
No, you don't!
You can't let the kid get away, or Reed will be down on him in no time. Oh, there's no end to it. There's no end to the hunt. There's no end to the killing. There's no end to the fear. Carefully sponsored and nurtured by the benevolent state. Black suddenly feels horribly in need of somebody to convince him that the state is wrong and he is right, and that the state is corrupt and he is pure, that the state has betrayed his trust, and that he is merely keeping faith with himself.
In a moment, Beyond 2000 will return with the conclusion of the hunting season. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
And this is KQED-FM, San Francisco. The NPR Playhouse 2000X will continue in a moment, and then at 10 o'clock, one half hour from now, wait, don't tell me.
What can we say about 2001 as it comes to an end other than here's your hat, what's your hurry? Quite a lot, we hope. I'm Peter Sagal. Join us as Wait, Don't Tell Me pokes through the refuse of a memorable year. And Madeleine Albright joins us to discuss her reign as Wait's Newsmaker of the Year and to pass on her crown to her successor. We're giving the year a boot in the rear on this week's news quiz from National Public Radio.
Wait, Don't Tell Me, Saturdays at 11 o'clock in the morning and 10 o'clock in the evening. That's followed by This American Life at 11 o'clock this evening. And after that, it's the evening rebroadcast of Weekend All Things Considered that comes up at midnight, followed by Seasons Griot, a special production. That's at 1 o'clock this morning. That's up ahead. Won't you stay with us? This is KQED-FM, San Francisco. Time now is 9:30.
And now, Act Two of Frank M. Robinson's The Hunting Season.
This is a strange sort of museum, David Black muses. No exhibits of any kind. The visitors take interest only in the decorations on the walls. But a scientific exhibits the usual dazzlingly smooth motions of shining machines, the soft-oiled sounds of mechanical monsters, there are none.
It's very good, isn't it? There's a feeling of majesty to it.
He almost forgot himself and let his hand dart to his Williams. Then he backed cautiously away.
She didn't, however, have the citizen look about her. Hair swept back into a bun, horn-rimmed glasses.
So he relaxed. I have never seen anything quite like this. All these paintings, these statues, they have a peculiar power. They stir me in some profound but elusive way.
Oh, really? Haven't you ever seen an art museum before?
Well, we don't have this sort of thing where I come from.
I see. You're from the hinterlands, the backwater?
Foreign land. A land very foreign to this one.
Oh, a DP.
A what?
A DP? Displaced person? A refugee?
In a manner of speaking.
I thought so. You speak English extremely well, but I was sure I heard a trace of an accent.
She hesitated a moment, thinking of the appropriate thing to do.
I wouldn't mind showing you around if you like. You might get more out of it if you have a guide.
You'd be running a risk, David thinks. But this is too fascinating, a phase of culture, something he's never seen before. He's probably as safe here as anywhere else. Yes, thank you.
Have you also seen the post-impressionists?
That was a truly enlightening experience.
Well, I bet you're not up on your literature and music either, are you?
What does it mean, up on?
Up on, familiar with.
I'm afraid not. In my world, these things are unimportant.
Oh, I do wish I had the time to take you through a library. I don't. You'll have to seek that out on your own. Well, tempus fugit, as they say. I must be on my way. Good luck, then.
As she leaves, Elizabeth Smith glances back at David for a moment. He's still standing where she left him.
Studying his hands with a curious and detached interest.
The store will be closing in 5 minutes. 5 minutes, please, until...
The department store was an inspiration. It's crowded with milling people, making it an excellent hiding place. And it's very possibly the best museum for studying this so-called civilization. He's worked his way to the top floor of the toy department. The dolls and a cowboy suit seem new to him, although he recognizes the toy soldiers and the war machines, precursors to those the children play with in his own time. And now it's near closing time. It's time to leave. What's wrong with this elevator? The lights. It isn't closing time. It's past closing time. I'm locked in.
You won't leave here alive, David.
What? David swirls around, but there's no one behind him.
Just the fuzzy-haired dolls. The teddy bears, the erector-set robots. You're a traitor against the state, and you're gonna die for it. One burn right between the eyes.
Black feels his scalp draw taut. His heart rises in his throat. His hand darts towards his Williams. David looks frantically around. This particular floor contains home furnishings and kitchen supplies, and there's rolls of linoleum at one end. He ducks low, He makes it down to the linoleum samples and then slides behind the rolls.
I can burn those rolls down little by little, David, until I flush you out in the open.
The voice seems to be coming from behind a patio display.
You'll have to give me more credit than that, David. My voice is no indication of where I am.
Black creeps stealthily away from the linoleum.
Do you want me to end it now, David? Or shall we prolong it a bit?
Reed must be using a wide-angled aperture on his Williams. He's fanning it in a blinding flare of light.
That nicely masks the source.
Black creeps farther along the side of the room and then lays on his stomach and starts to burn the legs of a table loaded with china several rows down. He works cautiously, charring the bottom half of the legs without causing any suspicious smoke. As he suspected,
Reed burns the spot.
From this angle, Black can see the source of the beam. He pauses on the ground floor and he listens. There's a soft creaking on the escalator a floor or two above. Of course, Reed didn't come alone. He brought other hunters. And it was one of them that David burned upstairs. Reed would never put himself in the line of danger. From somewhere in the store, David hears the sound of a knob turning in a door. Reinforcements are arriving for Reed's side. The hounds are coming to tree me. He inches closer to the alley exit of the double glass doors. He turns his body sideways. He hunches his shoulders and Reed's hunters have worn David Black down until he blunders and he stumbles in their whip. Oh, he's too tired to think logically about escape. His efforts are probably useless anyway. Yes, useless, I'm surrounded. Still, Black catches a ragged breath and he ducks into the nearest building. It's some sort of hotel, by the look of it.
Midtown Y.
Clerk at the desk doesn't even notice Black. In the basement, he finds exercise rooms and athletic courts, empty now for the evening. He looks them over quickly, then he fumbles for the light switch in the other darkened room. He can't find it. He hesitates for a moment, and then he has to go in.
His eyes are open. You can stop now. Hoist him up.
David blinks his eyes. He tries to focus them and he stares full into
Reed's thin, smiling face. You almost cheated the state of its quarry, David.
Since when has anyone ever cheated the state of anything?
You have no faith in the state, David. I'm surprised.
Yes, I have.
No, David. You have no faith in the state. You never did. Otherwise, you wouldn't have failed it. You wouldn't have rebelled against its dictates.
Well, maybe some of those dictates are wrong.
The state is never wrong.
You say so.
Not just if I say so. It's a self-evident truth. Repeat after me. The state is a perfect state. Say it!
It's a perfect state.
Say it like you mean it. The state is a righteous state.
The state is a righteous state.
And with the state as perfect and righteous as it is, you know you committed a great wrong in defying it, don't you, David?
Yes. 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 Yes.
It then becomes my duty as a hunter of the state to carry out its sentence. It'll be just as you requested, David. One burn right between the
Wait a minute.
What do you mean, wait a minute?
It's after sundown.
What?
He's got an hour.
We have to give him his hour. You know the rules.
God bless the righteous rules. You shut up!
All right, then. Let's get out of here.
David sags limply down on the wet tile. He's gotten the confirmation that he wanted. The state is wrong. The state is corrupt. And he has kept faith not so much with himself as with something higher than the state.
Elizabeth Smith plucks a blade of clover, puts it in her hair. Then she hunches on her side and stares at the far horizon. The tall, sleek, vertical lines of the nearly identical city buildings under the sooty exhaust trails of the military rockets. The gleaming barracks lining one side of the park. The rusting shacks of the rank and filers on the other side. A neat, standardized world mobilized forever against a threat that has long since vanished.
A monolith.
What?
The state is a monolith.
Oh. Well, it only appears so, Liz. In reality, a good opportunist working from within can pretty much have his own way. See those ants over there? There are hundreds of little citizen bureaucrats like that, paying obeisance to the state for their own ends.
You really think so, John?
Mm-hmm. Take our friend, Joseph Reed. How easy it was for him to betray his rival, David Black.
What are you going to do about Black anyway? We need him.
Or someone like him.
There's no one else like him, John. He's the first citizen to find himself prey to the hunt. Now we've analyzed how we may defeat the state. Black is essential to our efforts. Besides, I think we can use his strength.
Oh. The strength of a pale scholar just isn't enough, is it, Liz?
Oh, please, hush, hush. What a revolution. A school teacher and a jealous scholar trying to pull down the superstructure of a strictly military government.
Yes. But why not?
Do you really think we can do it?
The state has only one asset. Its power. We have everything it lacks. Goodwill, imagination, flexibility, and the capacity to grow in our thinking. Mm. Even humor.
And love.
That too, I hope.
And Black.
Possibly. I'm not sure. Mm. The hunters gave him a pretty bad time. And he's reacted encouragingly to his first experience with aesthetics, which could only have helped erode his conditioning. Huh. But what conclusions we can draw from these facts? Well, not much.
What about the incident in the basement of that hotel?
Oh, I'm sure he thoroughly hates Reed and the hunt, and maybe even the state. But if he hasn't turned the whole thing inward... You see, it's very common for the persecuted to blame themselves.
Mm-mm, I don't think so. He's not the type.
Maybe not. But even so, we can surmise the direction of his negative impulses with accuracy.
Hmm.
But we can't conclude anything about his positive ones. In terms of his allegiance, there is only a vacuum where the state used to be.
And it's up to us to step into that vacuum, John. We just have to chance it.
You're right. You're right. Let's try to save Black.
Okay.
You can go after him personally if you wish.
All right, what's his location now?
Well, I don't know. We've lost contact with him.
Well, great. Good, good. That means he's adjusting to his circumstances, learning how to hide.
Yes, the last period of the hunt has started. We'd better find Black before Reed does.
Yeah.
Black sits on the curb in the shade of the tracks of an elevated railway with two other bits of flotsam. His clothes are dirty and ragged. Dry blood spots his stubbly face. A scab is forming around the cut on his cheek. It's a souvenir from Reed.
Sure is hot today.
We need a bottle of wine. That's what we need. It's only 15 cents. Split it three ways.
Dim portion of David's mind thinks. It's all in the attitude. The secret of hiding is not to imitate your background, but become part of it. He'll be safe where he is, doing what he's doing until after sundown. And then, according to the rules of the hunt, he'll be entitled to regain all his property rights and citizen privileges. But that isn't what I want. I want revenge.
Look over there.
Where?
Coming off the L. Some well-dressed slobs come down here slumming, parading around to show us how better off than us they are. Well, they're just lucky, that's all. Life is a crapshoot.
I don't know. Maybe they work for what they got. Men different.
You said, brother.
Some people get all the breaks. That's all I'm saying.
You make your own breaks in this life, son.
I'll go in.
Dry up?
Yeah, go dry up, old man.
Suddenly, Black's mind snaps alert. The old man is dull and listless. The hopeless type you can expect to find on the street. He belongs there, but not Harry. Harry's too aggressive, too pushy, too bitter. He's trying too hard.
I think I'll just drag out of here. You take it easy, Pop.
I'll take along. I ain't been on the street too long. Maybe you can give me pointers.
Yeah, I get a pointer for you. Stay out of my way. Tag along with somebody else.
It's a free country.
Suit yourself.
Where are you going?
Just over here to the mission. It's bread and soup inside if you care to sink for your supper.
Hey, the entrance is over here.
Yeah, but the food's through the back door of the alley.
Oh, okay. I don't see no bread line back there.
You can't expect them to be as efficient as the state, right?
What's the state got to do with it? I don't get you.
Oh, I think you do. Well, what do you know? A transceiver. I'll just take this if you don't mind, and even if you do mind. There's an even better way of lasting through the hunts than sinking passively into the background, David muses coldly. And that is to turn the tables and hunt Reed. The ultimate winner will be whoever finds the other first. After a trip to the drugstore, David goes back to the mission, where he becomes just enough of a repentant sinner to gain access to the washroom. Oh, yeah, there he washes and shaves and dumps some dye into a bowl for a quick change of hair color to a convincing blonde. He gets rid of his glasses and uses wax that he found on Harry to alter the shape of his face. He's too tired to do it well, but what the heck? Maybe it's the very imperfections that will aid him. Harry's clothes fit him very well. Outside, Black listened to reports on the transceiver, hoping to trace one of the hunters.
Arnold Cooper, report.
No action here.
Where are you?
Still behind the counter at Carroll Estate in Washington. Another hour until the end of my shift.
Bingo. In the store, Black spotted him selling shirts and ties. He was a little too husky for a professional store clerk, too interested in the customers, too conservative in his dress for this time and place.
May I help you, sir?
I think so. Citizen.
The clerk's hand darted toward his waist.
I wouldn't, citizen. I have a Williams in my pocket.
What do you want?
Where's Reed?
It's against the rules.
To give information to a quarry. More answers like that last one will cost you your life.
What makes you think I care about that?
I think you care about it. And I think you care about how it comes about. My Williams is adjusted so that it won't char your clothing. It'll cook you rather slowly from inside out.
If I told you, I'd be betraying the state.
Yeah, how about that?
It won't do you any good, Black. I prefer to die for the state rather than to betray it.
Oh, ringing words, David thinks. He would have said the same thing once. Well, how about this? Nice ties.
You're killing me, Black.
It's funny how a citizen only scruples about murder when it's his own.
It's Reed's at the same hotel you started out from.
What room?
Next to yours.
Hey, what's going on here?
It appears your employee here has had a fainting spell. I'd better call an ambulance.
My goodness. It isn't fatal, is it?
I doubt it. It'll be a few hours, I think, before he comes to. And that'll be just time enough.
Close the door behind you. Put your hands on your head. You almost surprised me, David. You got by my guards very neatly. But you didn't see my little trip alarm in the hall.
You'll have to get witnesses to verify that the quarry met its requested end.
I've already sent for witnesses. You look tired. Have a chair while we wait. So near and yet so far, eh, David? You know something? You completely escaped the web this time.
I had no idea where you were until just now when you walked into this room. You've proved to be a very dangerous game. You've eliminated some of my best hunters.
Casualties are always a risk.
Very true. But the sheer number far exceeds my original estimates.
Black says nothing. Though again, he's puzzled. Most of the time, he's been too frightened, too worried about his own ability to hide, to pay much attention to disposing of his pursuers. But somebody has done it for him. And Reed?
Reed seems a little edgy underneath his cool facade.
And Black wonders why. Suddenly, it dawns on him. Where are the hunters that were supposed to show up any minute? They're not going to appear. Whoever's been picking off the hunters for the last 3 days has done David another good turn. What's that thing?
This? Well, they call it an alarm clock. There's one in every room. Didn't you notice yours?
Mine made a ticking noise in it, and that red stick twirled around a face.
Oh, this one seems to have wound down.
Wound down?
You have to wind them. Like this.
Get off of me!
I suppose you want your Williams back, too.
You brought yourself only a few minutes. You know that, don't you? When my men come through that door, it'll all be over for you.
Well, then, let's try not to waste time. You tell me that the state is corrupt and a tyranny, Joseph. Go ahead, tell me.
I won't betray the state.
You say it!
I won't.
Try.
The state is corrupt.
Again.
The state is corrupt.
That's very true, but this has gone far enough.
Let him go, Black.
A woman is there.
And a man.
And a few others behind them.
A woman looks familiar.
She comes over and takes the Williams from his limp hand.
Black sags into a chair, dully aware that the newcomers are hunters. And with that realization, he laces his fingers in front of his face, and he lets the tears of exhaustion just stream down his cheeks.
Ah, good. He seems to be coming around.
Right.
David wakes without the familiar sensations of overwhelming exhaustion and fear. He feels cool and clean. Somebody has washed and shaved him and tucked him into a comfortable bed between soft white sheets.
Are you feeling better now, David?
He turns his head and he looks at her. He's seen her before. In the wine shop, in the art museum, in Reed's hotel room.
No, she's dressed as a rank and filer.
Her companion, a thin, bookwormish-looking man, with an aura of steel about him nonetheless, stands by the window.
Out of which David can discern the familiar skyline of his own era. You're gonna get in trouble helping me, the state.
No, really. We're not exactly new at this. As far as the state's concerned, you were killed back in the 20th century by Hunter Joseph Reed.
I don't get it. Who are you, and why did you involve yourself with me?
Black, did it ever occur to you that other game, from time to time, might have gotten away?
Nobody's ever gotten away.
You did.
What makes you think hunters would report their failures?
You're telling me you were quarry once?
Both of us.
How did you get away?
Well, we don't look like the type who could, do we? But appearances aside, Liz and I, and some of the others, were better trained to elude than the hunters are to chase.
Mm.
And since the hunts are held in distant lands and distant times...
You're historians.
Well, not anymore. We hold other jobs now.
So you were the ones who...
We ran interference for you,
yes.
To use an old sports phrase.
Alone?
No, of course not. There's a whole network of us. An underground of escapees.
Like it or not, you've been rescued by a revolutionary movement.
I see. So this wasn't out of the kindness of your heart. You want something from me. You want my help.
Yes, that's right.
I see.
We need a renegade citizen who's intimate with the whole apparatus. One we can trust.
That's why we need you, David.
All right, let's say you succeeded. What would you install to replace the state as it exists now?
Nothing.
Nothing. You're crazy.
To level the state, only to erect another prefabricated regime.
That would be like replacing a tyrant with a despot.
Yes, but weaken the state's stranglehold on power.
Undermine society's confidence in the state's wisdom and benevolence with a little truth.
Open the channels to a free flow of knowledge and ideas.
Encourage and stimulate human intelligence and spirituality rather than suppress them.
And the society will change itself.
You're dreaming.
Are we?
Look, you don't have to convince me that the state has to go. It's cruel, it's unjust, it's thoroughly corrupt. But what you do have to convince me is to fall in with you. You and your pipe dream.
All right. All right. We agree on a goal. And that's a start. Now let's concentrate on that one goal.
Right.
Toppling the state. We have the organization. You have already seen how effectively it operates. But we also have a plan. You want revenge? Then you need us as badly as we need you.
Yeah, speaking of revenge, where's Joe Reed?
Oh, yes. Well, he's back as a small cog in the state's machinery. He knows nothing about the underground, but he does know that you escaped. However, he thinks you're still back in the 20th century.
He does he?
Yes, and he's claiming that he bagged you.
He should die. He did too much to me.
Well, then, David, is killing really the best you can think of?
No. No, it isn't. Let's start some rumors.
Hmm? Rumors?
Flex our muscles. See what we can do. And let's start with...
Joseph Reed is afraid. He has tried to control it. But he knows it shows in the glistening shine on his pale face and the nervous jump of his cheek muscles and his restless pacing back and forth on the faded rug of the seedy room of the seedy hotel. It's a late afternoon. It won't be long before the onset of the hunt.
You have been listening to The Hunting Season, based on a story by Frank M. Robinson. In the cast, you heard John O'Hurley as David, Thomas Tolles as Reed, Janet Carroll as Liz, and John Shuck as John.